making TV special.
Donuts. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
America is. America is. America is. America is. America is the home of it. America is the home of it. America is the home of it. American dreams are full of it. Look at the Indians. Look at the blacks. Look at the figures. Look at the facts. Look at the facts. Facts, not the lies, and you'll find out. Big surprise.
America is the home of the hypocrite. America is the home of the hypocrite. America is the home of the hypocrite. America dreams are full of it.
Check out the Indians. Check out the blacks. Check out the figures, then you check out the facts. Just check out some facts. Check out the facts, not the lies. And you'll find out. It's a big surprise. Right between the eyes.
America is the home of the hypocrite. America is the home of the hypocrite. America is the home of the hypocrite. America dreams only dream. No desperation limit. No desperation level.
Even though my nose don't work, I smell trouble.
No desperation limit, no desperation level.
Murder, murder in the government. Say you're sorry, say you're sorry.
No desperation limit, no desperation level.
Turn the key, turn the lock. Nationalism, you can suck my.
No desperation limit, no desperation level.
Watch how the world's progressing everywhere. Aggression, aggression.
Aggression, aggression. Aggression.
This is 3-year-old Adolf Hitler Campbell. We first brought you his story, which became a worldwide sensation last month after a supermarket north of Trenton refused to decorate a birthday cake with his name on it. The New Jersey ShopRite said it was inappropriate and refused to apologize to his parents. The Campbells say they're not Nazis, but they named their son Adolf Hitler and daughters Joycelyn Aryan Nation and Hanslyn Himmler Genie. The names all have ties to Nazi Germany. The couple says they can name their children whatever they want.
This is America. They say it's free. You have a right to name your child what you want to name your child, no matter what. It shouldn't have a meaning to it because your name, a name's a name.
It hurts. With threatening comments and people like that riding up and down the street, it hurts. It's not right.
The Campbells claim they simply like the names, but admit they've been harassed since word of the cake issue got out.
Little Adolf Hitler and the Cake War. As we begin this new episode with a sad update on that story, New Jersey State takes kids with Nazi names. The three New Jersey children with Nazi-themed middle names have been placed into the custody of the state, police said. Holland Township Police Sergeant John Harris and workers from the State Division of Youth and Family Services removed 3-year-old Adolf Hitler Campbell and his younger sisters, Joycelyn Aryan Nation Campbell and Hanslyn Henler Genie Campbell. Harris, that's Holland Township Police Sergeant John Harris, who was there to keep order on Tuesday, said DYFS did not tell police the reason the children were removed. DYFS spokeswoman Kate Burnick says the Child Welfare Agency does not comment on specific cases. The children and their parents, Heath and Deborah Campbell, received attention last month when a Northwestern supermarket bakery refused to put Adolf Hitler Campbell's name on a birthday cake. I realize how appropriate it is. And fortunately, my girlfriend pointed it out for me. I had just heard the Violent Femmes song, America Is. It just came up randomly on my iTunes. I was like, oh, that'll be perfect just to play for the show. It's political, it's short, it's poppy, it's punky, it's classic, yeah. But as the lead-in to this story, she said, oh, that's perfect. That's appropriate. We are the home of the hypocrite. To point that out a little bit, and it's It, I shouldn't even laugh. Second comment on this story from the Philly Inquirer. From Melissa. The kids should have their names changed legally to something normal, and their so-called parents should be sterilized. Not even remotely aware of the irony of that statement. Of course, Hitler, and the Nazis, and eugenics, and sterilization. No idea. And I've probably said it time and time again, so I don't spend time on message boards and comment places, because you more or less get nothing done, and whenever I do read them, it really depresses the hell out of me. However, as a side note, outside the store where I work, there are always people petitioning. And actually, all over Portland, they're all over the goddamn place, and it drives you insane. Hey, do you have a minute for the environment? Do you have a minute for gay rights? Do you have a minute... No, I don't. Stop bugging me on the street and get a better job. So this girl's outside of work and I'm coming out for a smoke break, which is, of course, always the easy way to get away from them. She's like, nope, I'm on the clock. Sorry. And they leave you alone. She asked if I had a minute for Planned Parenthood. I was like, no, I don't. I'm on a smoke break. So I go on my smoke break and I start to think, it's like, Planned Parenthood. I wonder if she has any idea about Margaret Sanger and eugenics and Hitler and racial hygiene and Margaret Sanger calling black people weeds and that whole endgame eugenics hole. I talked with her for a little while, asked her if people, you know, attack her, yell at her, say they're, you know, baby killers or you're promoting abortion, da-da-da, and she says, yeah, sometimes she usually just tells them to go away, but I basically asked her, I was like, hey, go check out Endgame, go Google Endgame plus eugenics, put it in a Google video or YouTube, and watch some clips, because there are more things here than I think you're aware of. So I asked her if she ever heard of the term eugenics, and she hadn't, so she must. I was telling someone else about it at work, as I digress more and more and more, that I was telling the Planned Parenthood girl out front, and he was like, man, why you gotta screw with people? Some young girl doing her part, trying to do her thing, and you gotta come along and get her to start Googling eugenics. It's like, well, that's what I do. And that's why I do this, MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of this site and this show. And I thank all you guys who are here week in, week out, as we ride the roller coaster and try and put the bitter, ugly pieces together in this bizarre puzzle we call the modern world, or the new world order. This is the B-side of episode 106. Coming to you from my apartment in downtown Portland, Oregon. We do the B-side once a week. We also do the live show Friday mornings at 10 Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern on praradio.org and revereradionetwork.com, the worldwide home of free speech. So yeah, I just covered a lot before I told you who I am and what we're doing. So that's the first story on this 106 B-side of MediaMonarchy.com. New Jersey State takes kids with names. And there are some other links. Of course, you can just go straight to the Holland Township Police's website and also check out the DYFS, the Division of Youth and Family Services in New Jersey. And this kind of crosses over between New Jersey and Philadelphia. And there's also links to some of the smaller local press. So I just mentioned the New World Order. That crazy conspiracy. My man Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, also behind, of course, Live Free or Die Radio on Oracle Broadcasting Network, and one of the amazing people behind the Intel Strike Report and blacklistednews.com and roguegovernment.com and Oracle Broadcasting, and those guys do fantastic work, and I thank them and salute them. The New World Order is almost in place. This, a new article, original from Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com. The New World Order is, for the most part, already here. This might be a horrible fact for most to accept, but unfortunately, it is a reality. For many years, we've had international institutions like the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, and many others actively working towards global government. Phony free trade deals like NAFTA, CAFTA, and others have been utilized to tear down borders between nations and usher in a new age of globalization. Prominent individuals such as George H.W. Bush, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Gordon Brown, Bill Clinton, Gary Hart, and several others have spoken openly about the possibility of forming a global government or a new world order. Despite the revelations from these men, it has continually been dismissed as conspiracy theory by the corporate-controlled Mockingbird media. In fact, Kissinger, the former Secretary of State under Richard Tricky Dick Nixon, spoke yet again about a New World Order during a recent CNBC interview and even recently wrote an opinion editorial published in the International Herald Tribune, IHT, entitled The Chance for a New World Order. Oh, wait, sorry. The Chance for a New World Order. If the New World Order is a conspiracy theory, why is it that prominent individuals amongst the U.S. and European political elite continue to talk about it? Now, we hit that clip where Kissinger mumbles on the floor of the stock exchange about the New World Order, and it's very appropriate, and we hit that on the previous episode, I believe. New to this one is the link to Heinz Kissinger's op-ed, The Chance for a New World Order, over on IHT.com. The article goes on, but we're going to move on to assassination updates, JFK, RFK, and the Bush crime family. A couple new bits here and others just fleshing out the record and some new book reviews. And we'll get to those in just a moment, but a new novel, upcoming novel, to describe JFK as sex fiend. This is from The Indian, THA Indian. A new novel describes former U.S. President John F. Kennedy as a shameless sex fiend who destroyed numerous lives. Publisher Simon & Schuster has revealed that British writer Jed Mercurio's book, entitled American Adulterer, will describe JFK as a philanderer during his White House years. The publisher said that the book would reveal that Kennedy had an, quote, uncontrollable and unrelenting appetite for sexual adventure. That reported by the New York Post. Simon & Schuster has also revealed that the book, scheduled for July release, will also talk about real-life Kennedy liaisons as Marilyn Monroe, Angie Dickinson, and Judith Campbell Exner. Representatives for JFK's daughter, Senate hopeful Caroline Kennedy, were unavailable for comment. She was too busy avoiding press conferences and coming out and actually saying, yeah, that Senate seat, it's mine. I'm a Kennedy elite, and you owe me that New York Senator seat because Bobby had it. And of course, Hillary Clinton, New York Senator, Bobby Kennedy's assassination, you know, it all ties in. A new one from Op-Ed News that actually is a nice list of research links for you. The Daddy Bush connection with JFK's assassination. Of course, we've mentioned that here before. Haven't gone into too much detail, but we can and we will. This is merely a small sample of many, many more sites where these came from. Some may be over the top or not, but most of them are as historically factually substantive as the 9/11 inside job scenario, so validated by scientific evidence, on-the-spot observations, and pictures of imploding, not exploding, towers. But which wasn't? We've got JFKMurderSolved.com, JohnFKennedy.net, the Nixon-Bush connection to the Kennedy assassination. Of course, just running a Google video search, JFK's assassination in the Bush family. Links to, of course, Tom Flacco. We would lump that into the over-the-top category. Jesus is Savior, GeoCities, CTRL.org, Amazon. You can buy, actually, and this is one of the better spots if you've not checked any of this out before. Of course, the Poppy Bush connection to JFK's assassination is to check out John Hankey's JFK to the Bush connection. And he's got it up on Amazon, so check it. Continuing with the op-ed piece after that list of links, it is limitlessly suspicious that Bush Jr. and Sr. have had their hands all over the two most consecutively treasonous events which have defined American history as much as the Civil War. The trail to the truth of JFK's assassination may be cold, but it would be a virtual act of God if it helped to confirm the engineering of 9/11 by George W. Bush and his fascist elite masters, and vice versa for JFK's assassination. Could 9/11 ironically be the event that also leads to the truth of JFK's assassination? What a twofer that would be. Like father, like son? Their postscript footnote, naturally, it's also, of course, a matter of historical record that grandfather Prescott Bush tried to engineer, you know, a Nazi coup d'etat in America in the 1930s. The plot to overthrow FDR. McCormick-Dickstein Committee. The archetypal treason family of Bushes, who also made much or most of their fortune with connections to Germany's World War II Third Reich. It's all there, and it's all, of course, infinitely, limitlessly suspicious, but not investigated. And you can be sure that the Obama-Biden regime will do nothing of the sort. Unless we can force it out. I don't think we're going to get into the Obama side today. We're going to save the biggies all for Friday's show. We'll, of course, the biggies being all the latest 9/11 updates. The Obama Saya, of course, with his coronation soon to come as we brace for that. And we'll go over all the Econo crash, all that on 107. Returning to assassination updates, however, JFK, RFK, and the Bush crime family from Secrecy News. That's at fas.org/blog/secrecy. New Bush Family Exposé, Family of Secrets. This is yet another book review and book mention. What does it say about the American political system that someone like George W. Bush was able to descend to the highest office of the land despite his meager and ambiguous record? That sounds familiar too now. In pursuit of an answer to that question, investigative journalist Russ Baker has constructed a full-fledged counter-history of the last half-century as it pertains to the Bush family. He writes in his new book, FamilyOfSecrets.com, that he discovered a dimension of power, quote-unquote, that conditions and distorts the American political process. It lies at the intersection of corporate oil interests, finance, and intelligence, and the Bushes have been at the heart of it. With a brief apology to the reader, Baker revisits the JFK assassination and George H.W. Bush's peculiar response to it. You remember when Hoover sent him a memo? On November 23rd, I believe it was, the day after JFK's assassination? Well, that wasn't me. That was some other George Bush in Texas in the CIA on November 22nd, 1963. Baker revisits the JFK assassination and Poppy Bush's peculiar response to it, and he embraces a radical reinterpretation of Watergate in which Nixon is the target and victim of the conspiracy rather than its instigator. That's not as wild or radical as you might think. Family of Secrets postulates a network of politically and financially powerful individuals working behind the scenes to advance their interests at the expense of the nation. I'm not sure if this book is up on Amazon yet, but like I said, familyofsecrets.com, and that sounds fantastic to check out. So, new book from Russ Baker. What I'll also mention, too, anytime we're talking maybe about any of the deep politics of JFK or Watergate or any of these guys, of course, to always check out Black Op Radio and, of course, the fine folks that he has on there, Jim DiEugenio and Lisa Pease and all those cats, who mainly focus on JFK and Nixon and 60s and 70s era assassinations. However, from the LA Times, Good Bobby, which is a new play, the writer and actor behind that, so the headline, Good Bobby, writer, actor, digs deep into Kennedy's core. Again, from the Los Angeles Times. It's been a grand time lately for actors playing famous U.S. political figures on film. Josh Brolin in W, Sean Penn in Milk, and Frank Langella reprising his stage role in Frost Nixon. Another compelling, if far less publicized, recreation of a major politician is also currently on view, this time on stage in Good Bobby, a new drama about Robert F. Kennedy written by and starring Brian Lee Franklin. The ambitious 10-character play back at the Greenway Court Theater after an extended run covers RFK's life and career from his early to late 30s, starting in 1958 with his role as chief counsel to the Senate Rackets Committee. It continues through older brother Jack's presidential win, Bobby's appointment as attorney general, JFK's assassination, and ending around the time of Bobby's 1964 U.S. Senate run. So a play probably none of us will have the chance to see anytime soon. It's called Good Bobby by Brian Lee Franklin. So we can't forget some of the other more lively arts here as we cover all the medias, or at least we try to, on MediaMonarchy.com. The rest of this posting, assassination updates, JFK, RFK, and the Bush crime family, are more reviews of some of the latest, what I call limited hangout books that we've already covered extensively in the post back in December, The Unsolved Mystery. So, as I write, and here are some more reviews for new limited hangout books we've already covered, within parentheses, because the mob, of course, also had the Secret Service stand down, stole the body, mangled the autopsy, destroyed evidence, set up a cover commission, you know, just like Osama bin Laden had NORAD stand down, destroyed the evidence, set up a cover-up commission, etc. So, we've got Cutting Edge News, they've got Kennedy, Castro's, and Murder. Gus Russo and Stephen Moulton have produced a well-researched and compelling study of the role Cuban, Soviet, and American intelligence agencies played in keeping track of Lee Harvey Oswald, the self-styled revolutionary credited with the assassination of JFK, his years in Dallas before the assassination. The mob did it, we think. That's from thedailybeast.com, a new website that's getting a bit more attention. The Mob Did It, We Think, a new book by the longtime assassination researchers Lamar Waldron and Portland, Oregon's Air America left host Tom Hartman, adds some new information to the legitimate accumulating literature. Legacy of Secrecy, the long shadow of the JFK assassination, of course, delves into the murder of JFK in over 800 pages of intricately documented data. It expands on their earlier book, Ultimate Sacrifice, which analyzed thousands of pages of released classified documents. Their findings add pieces to one of our most perplexing puzzles and suggest where the key missing pieces may be found. I should mention that first one we covered about Kennedy's, Castro's, and Murder, Gus Russo and Stephen Moulton's book is called Brothers in Arms, again, that we went over last month in the Unsolved Mystery. That's what it was called. So another one, Legacy of Secrecy, of course, the Waldron-Hartman book. This from the Canadian Press, heavily researched book, links JFK murder also to the killing of MLK and RFK. A new, heavily researched book on JFK's murder and its investigation sees links with a bag full of sensational stories, from President Johnson's fear of a nuclear attack by the Soviets to the killing of MLK. The links all connect with the main contention in Legacy of Secrecy, that the assassination was engineered by Carlos Marcello, longtime mafia boss in New Orleans. That theory is far from new. There's evidence that Attorney General Robert Kennedy, the president's brother, believed it. Authors Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman broaden that theme. Finally, from inentertainment.co.uk, Marcello had JFK killed. Again, a new book's been released, Legacy of Secrecy, by Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman. In the book, it proposes that mafia mobster boss Carlos Marcello from New Orleans had JFK killed. Not a new theory, but the book cites a testimony from Marcello where he said, quote, "Yeah, I had the son of a bitch killed. I'm glad I did. I'm sorry I couldn't have done it myself." It seems that Marcello does not care who knows that he orchestrated the assassination of JFK. The former mob boss also claims that he knew Jack Ruby and had him kill Lee Harvey Oswald. The book, the new book, which has 848 pages, also, of course, looks at the links between Marcello and the murders of RFK and MLK. I don't for a second deny their involvement somehow in these assassinations, but again, Carlos Marcello did not have the Secret Service stand down. He didn't steal the body on the flight. He didn't mangle the autopsy. They didn't set up a cover-up commission. It's bullshit, I believe. And it's fun and funny to hear and to try to call out Tom Hartman on this case. Again, done very well by the fine folks like Len Osanek at blackopradio.com. Right now, you're listening and watching The Bouncing Ball on MediaMonarchy.com as I come to you with this B-side of episode 106. It's late in the evening on Wednesday night. It's January 14th, 2009. However, this episode will probably not be up until the 15th, so we're going to head and just call it January 15th. Now we're going to jump into some things I haven't had time to hit or to go into. We're going back now to just over a week ago, January 6th. Media memes, Travolta, Groucho, Oregon art, and world events. First, I'm sure you probably heard mention of this. I maybe threw out a mention of it on a previous episode when I didn't have time to go into it. Originally from the Associated Press, and of course there are numerous updates to this, even beyond my updates on this posting. Scientologist John Travolta's son dies strangely from a medical episode while on vacation in the Bahamas.
John Travolta's 16-year-old son has died. Police say Jet Travolta had a medical episode Friday while vacationing with his family in the Bahamas. He was taken to the hospital and pronounced dead. Jet was the oldest son of John and wife, actress Kelly Preston. They also have an 8-year-old daughter named Ella. Nicole Levitt, The Associated Press.
John Travolta's teenage son Jet died in the Bahamas after falling ill and hitting his head at a family's vacation home, police said January 2nd. A house caretaker found Jet, J-E-T-T, age 16, unconscious in a bathroom late Friday, January 2nd morning. He was taken by ambulance to a Freeport hospital where he was pronounced dead, according to a statement from Chief Police Superintendent Basil Romming. The teenager had last been seen going into the bathroom on the day before and had a history of seizures, according to the statement. Police said they're planning an autopsy to determine the cause of death. Another police spokeswoman, Loretta Mackey, said Jet apparently hit his head on the bathtub. A spokeswoman for the Rand Memorial Hospital in Freeport said she could not release any information because of privacy concerns. We, of course, just hit that AP clip, and I'm sure there are other video updates, but just some of the updates I have posted up here a little bit in chronological order from NewsOK.com. Two experts to autopsy Travolta's teenager. Travolta's son died of seizure disorder. That's from ArkansasMatters.com. Dr. Cyril Wecht, a man heavily involved in the investigation into the assassination of JFK, weighs in on the death of Jet Travolta. That's from WPXI.com. Another one, Wecht, unanswered questions in Travolta death. That's from the PittsburghChannel.com. And I believe Dr. Cyril Wecht is originally out of Pennsylvania. And again, of course, BlackOpRadio.com. Tons of interviews with Wecht and even his son, Ben Wecht, I believe. Jet Travolta secretly cremated. That's from MomLogic.com. And the final update I have posted up, Travolta and Preston returned to Florida with son's ashes. That's from CNN. However, the important perspective on this, I think, comes very well from a story on the National Post. Network.NationalPost.com, one of the blogs on there. Dianetics, drugs, and the death of a young Travolta. The news that 16-year-old Jet Travolta's death certificate now lists seizure disorder as the cause of his death in the Bahamas last week may have had the unusual effect of raising more questions than it answers. Given that seizures derive from brain malfunctions and that the Church of Scientology, of which the Travoltas are devout members of the highest stratum, frequently rejects brain-related diagnoses, many of the questions are being pointed at the grieving parents, John Travolta and Kelly Preston, and whether their quirky beliefs may have contributed to their son's death. That's sparked interest in this case not only from the typical supermarket line celeb watchers, but from Scientology's numerous critics as well. Jumping down a bit, questioning someone's personal beliefs amidst such a profound tragedy is tricky business, to say the very least. But the Jehovah's Witnesses, Jews, Catholics have all had their faith around preventing death publicly debated. Starting again, but the Jehovah's Witnesses, Jews, and Catholics have had their faith around preventing death publicly debated, and even if the Church of Scientology's skepticism toward modern medicine isn't exactly unique, its strange culture of secrecy has a way of inviting special scrutiny. Already, stories on the mainstream media outlets, like one from TimesColumns.Typepad.com, TheSun.co.uk, and of course Gawker and more, are asking aggressively about how his church's pharmaceutical phobia, deliciously ironic given of course founder L. Ron's own alleged pill-popping obsession, might have been part of the short, sad story of Jet Travolta and tales from the former Scientologists who have had experience with untreated illnesses themselves. Of course, go to Xenu.net, sometimes with equally terrible consequences. Of course, LisaMcPherson.org. Of course, the girl who died in Clearwater, Florida, one of the strongholds of the cult of Scientology. One church official defended Scientology to MSNBC with a link for you, explaining that their group does not reject conventional medical treatment for medical conditions when physically ill. It will only disregard a psychological diagnosis. But given the blurry line between the two, when it comes to matters of gray matter, the most likely explanation may turn out that no one knew exactly what Jet was suffering from, since his reported brain dysfunctions may have never had a proper medical diagnosis. Whatever happens, more than the Travoltas, the Church of Scientology's top-notch public relations arm finds itself being tested yet again with another scandal, while the world's concern for baby Suri's safety only deepens. That's from usmagazine.com, of course. Staying into the media and the memes, this from Bill Moyers, and I believe this, it comes from consortiumnews.com, and it seems sort of like a transcript from a talk on a television show. However, again, whenever I see any of my favorite media touchstones, whether it's, you know, Morrissey or Orson Welles or The Simpsons or Woody Allen, or in this case, the Marx Brothers, making duck soup out of today. This is my little edited version of this from, again, Bill Moyers. Life imitates satire and vice versa, which they make a funny list of as everyone makes their year-end lists. Again, this is as we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel of 2008 a little bit. I apologize. They made a funny list of the best movies of 1933, which, of course, in its own way kind of mirrors what's happening right now. So, along with things like King Kong and The Invisible Man and 42nd Street, they mentioned their number one choice, the Marx Brothers, Duck Soup. Why? Because as we enter this final month of the Bush years, the parallels are remarkable. And, of course, we'll note now that it's 5 more days till Obama, 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 5 more days till Obama, Silver Shamrock. If you get that joke, send me an email. Because now we're only, of course, a few days away before the coronation. But as Bill Moyers writes again, because as we enter this final month of the Bush years, the parallels are remarkable. Sometimes it feels as if we live not only in the United States, but also in the side-splitting state of Fredonia, the imaginary country in which duck soup takes place. In 1933, a time much like now of calamity, fraud, and peril, the Great Depression gripped America. FDR just become president and declared a New Deal, while in Germany, Adolf Hitler was named Chancellor, the beginning of the Third Reich. Two events that, of course, are very much related. As all of this was taking place, the Marx Brothers, there were four of them then, Groucho, Chico, Harpo, and Zeppo, they shot Duck Soup, a comedy that almost inadvertently transcended slapstick, becoming a trenchant send-up of power and vanity and the disastrous consequences of both. Fredonia is bankrupt and asking for a bailout. Sound familiar? The wealthy Mrs. Teasdale, played by the redoubtable Margaret Dumont, says the only way she'll come up with the money is if the country appoints as its new leader Rufus T. Firefly, of course, played by Groucho, as only a true clown can play a charlatan. He sings at one point, quote, "The last man nearly ruined this place. He didn't know what to do with it. If you think the country's bad off now, just wait till I get through with it." If you've never seen Duck Soup, or if you've never seen any Marx Brothers movies, or You Bet Your Life, or anything, you're missing out on classics of American comedy. A nice Oregon update to the shoe heard around the world. This coming from the Ashland Daily Tidings, dailytidings.com, out of Ashland, Oregon. Oregon Art Gallery hosts Bush Shoe Toss. Ashland City Councilor Eric Navickas and his partner Amy Goddard opened their co-owned Mata Shell Gallery on January 2nd, 2009, with a carnival attraction. Visitors were given an opportunity to shoe Bush through the use of a slingshot that launched a shoe attached to a wooden stick at a large face of President Bush. The soles of the shoes were painted to provide a splattering effect and perhaps art.
Hi, Hi, I'm Mandy Valencia, and this is Mandy on the Street. Tonight we're at the Matta Gallery opening. People are shooting shoes at Bush.
It's been pretty quick to pull off.
Yeah.
How long had you been thinking about it, though?
Oh, the space we've been trying to get for about the last month. But the show idea just kind of came. We knew we got it. We weren't really sure we'd get it, and then we kind of let's try to do the first Friday quick.
Have you been? I mean, are there works of art you've done for a while though? I mean, have you been doing art for a long time?
I paint.
Mm-hmm.
But this first real sort of installation.
Is that a painting of Bush?
Yeah, this is a painting of Bush, and it's suspended. So the whole idea of this installation is it's a carnival game.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a dollar, and you spend a dollar, and you get a shot. And if you get a good shot, if you get three good shots in a row, then you get, this is the prize. Mm-hmm. And then if you get 10 good shots in a row, then you can get a handmade monster.
Two Bush beanbags.
Oh, very
so
nice.
This is three direct hits. You win a free beanbag so you can actually shoot Bush on your own. Kind of a fundraiser for us because we're just getting going, and so we're doing a dollar a shot.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I mean, if you don't have a dollar and really want to throw a shoe, then, you know, we're not going to be like
an IOU or something.
So you just can't win a prize that way.
Ah, I see.
Okay, just hold it like this.
Yeah, okay, just
like that.
Yeah.
And then just keep it on the stick. Pull it back to the shoe when you get it. Fire! Step right up, one R. Yeah, that's what it looks.
All right,
what you gonna do?
I
grab it like that.
I can imagine.
Keep it on this stick.
Collection. This might be a
store. Go, Randy.
There's more to that video, but the audio doesn't really do anything for it. You're basically listening to old people throw shoes at Bush, which is funny to watch and funny to think about. But Oregon Art Gallery hosts Bush Shoe Toss. World events now on this Media Memes, Travolta, Groucho, Oregon Art, and World Events. This from the UPI, again, scraping the bottom of the 2008 barrel for the last bit of muck. Or gold, perhaps, maybe in this case. World events fall through the cracks in U.S. media. The much criticized, and usually with good reason, U.S. news media missed or underreported a lot of big stories in 2008. Half the stories that United Press International lists as the most neglected or lost of 2008 were in Latin America and Africa, vast regions that have dropped off the map as far as the national U.S. media are concerned. My truncated version for you here. First, just across the U.S. border, the Mexican state reeled from the growing power of the drug lords who ran virtual fiefdoms in some of its northern states. Those northern states, of course, are bordering our southern states, and the latest reports I believe I've seen today or yesterday, of course, that Mexico could literally collapse at any moment. Second, the U.S. media and national political leaders were asleep at the growing power of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Third, the U.S. media virtually ignored the slide toward anarchy and civil war in the most populous nation in Africa, Nigeria. Fourth, the U.S. media shockingly neglected the three worst human rights violation stories in the world, all three of them, of course, in Africa, too. Fifth, on the list of UPI's most overlooked or lost or neglected stories of 2008. Fifth, it took Al Jazeera to report that in 2008, at least 6 million African Muslims converted to Christianity. This was a trend of enormous importance and vast scale, yet you found it nowhere in the U.S. electronic or print news media. In 2008, at least 6 million African Muslims converted to Christianity. Sixth, in August, Russia's blitzkrieg conquest of one-third of the former Soviet Republic of Georgia made headlines around the world, but the far more significant renewal and expansion of Russian strategic nuclear forces that occurred in 2008 was virtually ignored in the U.S. and Western Europe media, apart from the UPI, which covered it closely. Watch for that one to make a nice rise to the top of the charts with a bullet very soon. And, of course, Soviet Watch for that word. Seventh, most of the Arab world was remarkably stable in 2008, though you wouldn't have known it from the op-ed pages and regular pundits of the U.S. media. Eighth, coverage of the U.S. and then global economic crisis that erupted in September with the fall of Lehman Brothers Investment House in New York focused on developments in the U.S., China, Russia, and Western Europe. But the collapse of China's enormous industrial export trade with the United States got far too little coverage and analysis. Ninth, most Americans took it for granted that India was a strong ally of the U.S., if they thought about it at all. In fact, U.S. defense companies remained frozen out of the Indian arms market in 2008, and the Indian armed forces continue to buy big for their combat aircraft, aircraft carriers and frigates, main battle tanks, heavy military air transports, and even co-produced BrahMos cruise missiles from Russia. Finally, plenty of news came out of Afghanistan, but the analysis to put it in the context was woefully lacking. UPI editor emeritus Arnaud de Borchgrave and Mr. Lind provide that context when almost no one else did. They warned how U.S. neoconservative and liberal passions for democracy, nation-building, women's rights, and wars on drugs had alienated millions of ordinary Afghans and played into the hands of the resurgent Taliban, who increased their power by giant strides, defying NATO's undermanned and ham-handed efforts to stop them. Of course, none of this mattered compared with the fun and games of Jim, Brad, and Brittany. World events fall through the cracks in U.S. corporate mockingbird media. That from the Mooney Press UPI. Finally, on this Media Memes posting, it's a nice little compilation video that's nice to give some attention to. However, no time to go into it here. It's a nice compilation, David Icke, Alex Jones, and some of the heavy hitters of this pool we're swimming in and trying to pull other folks into how to stop the New World Order. However, we're going to go back to Philly. So we've got a lot of action happening in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, a lot of police state activity. This, no exception. Again, going back to Tuesday, January 6th, from the New York Times, Philadelphia Mall boasts new Army recruitment arcade. Amid the last-minute shopping bustle, the voice in the black helicopter simulator shouted with an urgency that exceeded even the holiday mall frenzy. Enemy right! Enemy right! Trigger squeezed, pixels exploded, shopping waiting. At the Franklin Mills Mall here, past the Gap outlet and the China Buddha Express, is a $13 million video arcade that the Army hopes will become a model for recruitment in urban areas where the armed forces typically have a hard time attracting recruits. The Army Experience Center is a fitting counterpart to the retail experience. 14,500 square feet of mostly shoot-'em-up video games and three full-scale simulators, including an AH-64 Apache Longbow helicopter, an armed Humvee, and a Black Hawk copter with an M4 carbine assault rifle. For those who want to take the experience deeper, the center has 22 recruiters. Or, for more immediate full-contact mayhem, there are the outlet stores. Ha ha ha. The facility, which opened in August, is the first of its kind. It replaces five smaller recruitment stations in the Philly area at about the same annual operating cost, not counting the initial expenses, said Major Larry Dillard, the program manager. Philadelphia has been a particularly difficult area for recruitment. That must mean that their economy is working in their actual jobs and, you know, schools and things. We'll have to destroy that. That can't be. The Army recruited 80,517 active personnel in the fiscal year that ended in October, slightly surpassing its goal of 80,000, though as in recent years it fell below its goal of having 90% of recruits be high school graduates. But of course now we don't give a shit and we want illegals and gangbangers and convicted, aggravated felons filling the ranks. Because they won't have a problem shooting your family. Whereas good old boy, who's a good old cop trying to do the right thing, may suddenly go, hey, wait, this martial law thing, I ain't doing this. An interesting correlation to this one on the video game tip. So on a related note, from the Telegraph, T. TV and video games causing speech problems for toddlers. Toddlers could be screened for speech problems after evidence that many are so addicted to television and video games that they're failing to learn basic communication skills. Link to computerandvideogames.com. An ambitious nationwide screening program for two-year-olds is reportedly being considered to tackle the problem, which experts say is now more prevalent than dyslexia or autism. The decline of the traditional family mealtime, the long hours culture in the parents' workplace, poor childcare with little stimulation, and social deprivation are also being blamed. Barely a tenth of children in some areas can repeat even one nursery rhyme, and in extreme cases, some don't even know their own name. The screening program is being considered after review into services for children with speech problems led by the Tory MP John Bercow. Tests could be carried out by health visitors with a Wikipedia link. Again, there's always that sort of language divide. It's like health visitors. Tests could be carried out by health visitors in a similar way to that in which they check eyesight, hearing, and general development. Mr. Bercow concluded that children with untreated speech difficulties are at risk of ending up unemployed, experiencing mental health problems, and involved in crime. If children are in a home in which they are getting insufficient stimulation, where there's not enough interaction, or where communication through the spoken word is not as common or extensive or imaginative as it might be, that is bound to have an impact, Bercow told the Daily Mail. The reality is that for far too long, speech and language problems have been under-recognized. One interesting comment on this story: the results of this study are strange to me. Yes, there are many negative issues associated with being raised having TV as your primary caretaker, but I learned a lot of vocabulary and the basics of plot development from watching TV. Maybe programming was better back then. And that's the interesting question. Of course, I was raised in a way to think, oh yeah, you blame the media because that's what makes kids, you listen to Judas Priest and you shoot yourself, or it makes you do these things, and I think that that's ultimately bullshit. And the comment raises a good point, because there has to be some type of moderation in there. There has to be. This eases us into the posting that I just put up today, which, as I speak to you, is Wednesday, January 14th. EnviroHealth, Sonar, Vets, and Condom Corn. And again, like last week, we saved the porn for last. We'll save the condom corn for last here on this EnviroHealth posting. First, from the Associated Press, Navy to train with sonar off Hawaii. We follow the sonar stories and its effects on wildlife. Again, generally, this doesn't get much attention because this isn't somehow as flashy as the vagaries of man-made climate change. But yeah, we don't have to worry about that. Don't worry about cross-species chimeras and genetically engineered corn and all that. Just pay attention to carbon tax. Navy to train with sonar off Hawaii. The U.S. Navy was granted a one-year permit to train with sonar and bombs in Hawaii waters so long as it tries to protect whales and other marine animals from harm. Which the Navy may say, no, we can't promise we'll try, but we'll try to try. The Navy warned that whales and other marine life may be harmed or even killed, though that wasn't expected. Some marine species, particularly beaked whales, appear to be more vulnerable to harm from sonar, and scientists aren't sure why. The National Marine Fisheries Service is still considering Navy requests to change with mid-frequency active sonar in waters off Southern California, the East Coast, and the Gulf of Mexico. The Marine Mammal Protection Act requires the Navy to ask for the Fisheries Service's permission to carry out activities that may affect marine animals. The authorization that took effect January 5th also allows the Navy to set off bombs and fire guns during Hawaii drills. I believe the most recent flashback, I didn't dig all the way through all the mentions of sonar versus the animals on MediaMonarchy.com, but one of them goes back to January 2008. Navy must cut sonar use off California, and it seems like with each new update, it's yes they can, no they can't, yes they can, no they can't. Another one from the Associated Press, veterans exposed to incorrect drug doses. The top Republican on the House Veterans Affairs Committee demanded Wednesday, that's today, January 14th, that the VA Veterans Administration explain how it allowed software glitches to put the medical care of patients at its health centers nationwide at risk. Quote, I'm deeply concerned about the consequences on patient care that could have resulted from this software glitch and that mistakes were not disclosed to patients who were directly affected. I've asked VA for a forensic analysis of all pertinent records to determine if any veterans were harmed, and I'd like to know who was responsible for the testing and authorized the release of the new application. That said by Republican from Indiana, Representative Steve Beyer, and there's links to his regular House page as well as the House Veteran Affairs Committee page. Patients at VA health centers were given incorrect doses of drugs, had needed treatments delayed, and may have been exposed to other medical errors due to the glitches that showed faulty displays of their electronic health records, according to internal documents obtained by the Associated Press under the Freedom of Information Act. But I thought all the medical electronic databases was going to make everything safer. Finally, it's time for the condom corn, unfortunately. This from Greenpeace. No need for condoms. Genetically engineered corn can do the job. New research from Austria, which actually someone, fortunately, on Reddit.com, of course, one of those sort of dig, you know, user-generated, vote the stories up kind of websites, Reddit.com, fortunately, on their posting of this story, no need for condoms, GE corn can do the job, they said, why didn't Greenpeace link up the goddamn report? And that's one of my biggest complaints, and that's what I try and do for you here on MediaMonarchy.com, what I feel like a lot of other sites don't do. A new report was released today, the blah, blah, blah. It's like, link it up. It's the fucking internet. That's why it's so great. You can link me to that report. However, in this case of the 968 KB PDF, it's in German, I believe. But it's there for you. New research from Austria shows that a commercial strain of Monsanto-made genetically engineered corn causes mice to have fewer and weaker babies. What is this doing to human fertility? Regulators around the world said Monsanto's GE corn was as safe as non-GE strains. It has been approved in many countries and regions, including the U.S., the EU, Argentina, Japan, Philippines, and South Africa. China approved the GE corn for animal feed back in 2005. Have we heard anything about their food recently? Until this research, under the Austrian Ministries for Agriculture and Health, none of the regulators had seriously questioned the safety of Monsanto's GE corn. The biotech industry is playing a game of genetic roulette with our food and with our health. Moving from the Earth to space and space's effect on this rock we call the Earth. From the fine folks at Fox News. Powerful solar storm could shut down the U.S. for months. A new study, again a new study, from the National Academy of Sciences, nationalacademies.org, a new study from the National Academy of Sciences outlines grim possibilities on Earth for a worst-case scenario solar storm. Damage to power grids and other communication systems could be catastrophic, the scientists conclude, with effects leading to a potential loss of governmental control of the situation. The prediction is based, in part, on a major solar storm in 1859, with a link to space.com, Mystery Monday, that caused this solar storm in 1859 that caused telegraph wires to short out in the U.S. and Europe, igniting widespread fires. It was perhaps the worst in the past 200 years, according to the new study, and with the advent of modern power grids and satellites, much more is at risk. A contemporary repetition of the 1859 event would cause significantly more extensive and possibly catastrophic social and economic disruptions, the researchers conclude with a link to NASA.gov. Severe space weather. Boom, boom, boom. When the sun is in the active phase of its 11-year cycle, it can unleash powerful magnetic storms. More links to space.com for you. Powerful magnetic storms that disable satellites, threaten astronaut safety, and even disrupt communication systems on Earth. The worst storms can knock out power grids by inducing currents that melt transformers. Modern power grids are so interconnected that a big space storm, the type expected to occur about once a century, could cause a cascade of failures that would sweep across the United States, cutting power to 130 million people or more in this country alone, the new report concludes. Again, more links to space.com and even some videos to watch. Such widespread power outages, though expected to be a rare possibility, would affect other vital systems. Impacts would be felt on interdependent infrastructures with, for example, potable water distribution affected within several hours, perishable foods and medications lost in 12 to 24 hours, immediate or eventual loss of heating, air conditioning, sewer disposal, phone service, transportation, fuel resupply, and so on, the report states. It's at this point you can hit that link to books.nap.edu to Severe Space Weather Events, Understanding Societal and Economic Impacts Workshop Report. It's not free. You can look at some sneak preview PDF summaries, but it would cost us $31.50. Returning to the article originally from Fox News. Outages could take months to fix, the researchers say. Banks might close and trade with other countries might halt. Emergency services would be strained and command and control might be lost, using military language written by the researchers led by Daniel Baker, director of the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics, LASP.colorado.eu, of course, at the University of Colorado in Boulder, home of KBFR. BlastedOutMediaMonarchy.com. Thank you, guys. Whether it is terrestrial catastrophes or extreme space weather incidents, the results can be devastating to modern societies that depend on a myriad of ways on advanced technological systems. Jumping down in the article for the punchline. The race is on for better forecasting abilities as the next peak in solar activity is expected to come around 2012.
Our sun can sometimes get angry and blast our planet with billions of tons of hot ionized plasma. It's called a coronal mass ejection, or CME.
In 1998, an enormous CME impacted the Earth and caused a satellite to go down over the middle of the United States that happened to be carrying pager signals for almost everyone in the United States. As a result, doctors and nurses didn't get pages about their patients. Anybody who was expecting a page didn't get it, and that had a real impact on our society.
Similarly, the airlines flying over the poles, they can lose communications, and that's not legal for them to be flying in a situation where not communication with the ground.
But something that's more important to passengers, and as human beings, you worry about radiation exposure and so on, and especially pilots who have to fly these aircraft over the pole.
One flight over the pole could be the equivalent of, say, 100 chest x-rays.
Large electrical utility systems can get hit with huge power surges.
Especially long grids at high latitudes that go north-south can actually pick up a lot of extra current in them, and power companies are very aware of this.
Long steel pipelines are at risk.
To understand why, think about this. This is a power supply, an inverting transformer. This one happened to be from my computer. You probably have hundreds of devices like this in your life, either seen or unseen inside of other electrical gear. High voltage, like the sun, comes in this side, and through the magic of magnetic fields, is induced to flow across to the other side, where a low voltage current, like the Earth, is produced. The problem is, no human engineer wrote the specifications. No underwriter's laboratories verified the safety of the giant inductor that surrounds the entire planet Earth.
Wow.
When one of these CMEs impacts the Earth's magnetic field, it causes the leading edge of our magnetic field to recoil toward the planet. That in turn changes the magnetic field near the surface of the planet and induces electric currents in anything that can conduct electricity. If it happens over a large power grid, the power grid carries a large DC current.
There was an example in March of 1989 where Hydro-Quebec lost power. Millions of people lost power for almost 10 hours, I believe, and it was attributed to a major geomagnetic storm.
These can be very serious problems for modern technology, especially in the northern latitudes.
And the sun is capable of a whole lot worse than anyone now alive has ever seen. On September 1st of 1859, conditions on the sun and in the magnetic field of Earth came together to create a nearly perfect solar storm.
When the solar flare went off, the intensity of the sunlight doubled. So anybody walking on the street would have noticed this.
17 hours later, aurorae were seen as far south as Hawaii, Havana, and Hong Kong.
The aurora borealis created very intense currents that flowed in the ionosphere, and these currents induced currents on the surface of the Earth.
Telegraph stations across Europe and America caught fire. Several buildings burned to the ground.
People received shocks associated with touching conductors at that time.
And the impacts of that event a century and a half ago may only be a fraction of what the sun can really do.
Our technology is much more advanced now than in 1859, but at the same time, our technology is more vulnerable to a storm of this magnitude. One thing that can happen is the radiation belt intensification can cause damage to spacecraft. So communications would be blacked out. One can only envision what might happen if the 1859 event occurred today.
One quick video about sunstorms and the possible catastrophic destruction it would wreak on our technological world. And of course, there's multiple links in that story, and you can start to go down the rabbit hole of 2012 and solar and Earth changes and things. Something related to this, again from space.com, science and astronomy. Mystery roar in space detected. Space is typically thought of as a very quiet place, but one team of astronomers have found a strange cosmic noise that booms 6 times louder than expected. The roar is from the distant cosmos. Nobody knows what causes it. Of course, sound waves can't travel in a vacuum, which is what most of space is, or at least they can't very efficiently. But radio waves can. Radio waves are not sound waves, but they are still electromagnetic waves situated on the low frequency end of the light spectrum. Many objects in the universe, including stars and quasars, emit radio waves. Even our home galaxy, the Milky Way, emits a static hiss, first detected in 1931 by physicist Carl Jansky, J-A-N-S-K-Y. Other galaxies also send out a background radio hiss. But the newly detected signal described here at the 213th meeting of the American Astronomical Society is far louder than astronomers expected. There is, quote, something new and interesting going on in the universe, said Alan Kogut of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. Mystery roar in space detected, and again, thanks to my man Lee Rogers at RealGovernment.com for giving us a bit more of the intergalactic perspective on some of the Earth changes and some of the new world order events that we see swirling around us. We're going to wrap up this B-side of 106 of MediaMonarchy.com with episode 184 of Outside the Box by my man, Alex Ansari. Originally broadcast on Portland Community Media here on Cable Access on January 8th, 2009. In this episode, Alex goes over his 2009 forecast, which, of course, we hit last week on his 2009 forecast, a special YouTube video that he created with DMP Truth up on YouTube. Alex goes over his 2009 forecast, followed by an interview with Matthew Stein, the author of When Technology Fails, at, of course, whentechnologyfails.com. Some of the topics include water purification and stored food, and then later on, Alex discusses the current situation in Gaza, as well as several many other important reports. Let's listen to Matthew Stein on Outside the Box, the author of When Technology Fails.
I approach it from multiple levels. You know, in the short term, I think everybody should have a grab-and-run kit, which is something that I keep mine in a boot tub, and then I have a backpack ready in case I need to, you know, I live in earthquake country, and so do you. So if a big earthquake came through, chances are we'd have wildfires and earthquakes at the same time. Bridges would be out, and I'd be hoofing it. And so I have the option with a grab-and-run kit to provide my food, shelter, water, medicine, first aid kit for myself and my family, throw it on my back, throw it in my car, whatever. It's so that I can go down this road, leave my house behind if I have to, and know that I can provide clean, pure water for my family and myself to drink, that I have some basic supplies. Someone's cut, I can bind it up. I've got cloth tape for my heels. You know, someone's not used to hiking and being in the backcountry, and all of a sudden they've got to walk down the road with a pack on their back. Chances are really good that you're going to blister up in the first mile or two. Mm-hmm. So I always have, anytime I'm in the backcountry and in my grab-and-run kit, I always have a roll of inch-and-a-half cloth tape. And so before you blister, you want to pull those shoes off as soon as you feel yourself getting sore in your heels or wherever in your foot. You want to pull those shoes and socks off and use some of that tape to kind of scrub the scummy oils off your skin, and then throw that tape away, and then put some clean tape that sticks really good in the sauce in the sore spot. Otherwise, you go another mile down the road, you're not going anywhere, because you're suddenly in agony, and every step is agony, and you're not going to get very far. So I like to look at, I like to keep myself prepared for short-term emergencies, for longer-term problems, so that, and that's where knowledge and some, you know, supplies, being able to grow your own food, being able to forage for edible herbs and plants, having clothing, being comfortable in the backcountry, being comfortable living without very much is very important. And then in the long run, I mean, I hope it never happens, but my book has a wealth of information in there so that if things really fell apart for a long period of time, you know, my book has the kind of information that our grandparents, somebody in our grandparents' community had. Like, back 100 years ago, in a community, there was somebody who knew how to blow glass, somebody knew how to make pottery, somebody knew how to weave cloth, somebody knew how to make a saddle for a horse, somebody knew how to shoe a horse. All that information was there in somebody in your community or your extended community, and most of that's been lost in this century.
So why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, it's convenience. It's like, it was a lot of work to do that stuff. I mean, my mother was sort of a living historian, and she would spin yarn from wool. She'd card the wool and spin yarn, and she'd weave. She'd knit sweaters and all that kind of stuff. And the number of hours that went into making a single sweater, I mean, she had hundreds of hours. Now, I could go out and work at my job for 15 minutes and earn enough money to buy a nice wool sweater in a store. And my mother would make a sweater the old way, and there would be hundreds of hours in that sweater. So it's just plain convenience. Now, when I first received the inspiration to write my book, it was 1997, roughly Thanksgiving, and I've had a 30-year practice of prayer and meditation, and one morning I just was praying and meditating, and I said, you know, guide me. Like, God guide me, whatever. I mean, I didn't really expect to hear anything. I mean, it's not like I pray and ask for guidance, and which I do fairly often, but I usually don't really actually hear anything. And this particular morning, I had a bomb dropped in my lap. I got a storyboard outline, like they outline movie plots in pictures for scene to scene to scene. Well, I had that for my book dropped on my lap. And I never in my life thought of writing anything remotely like my book. And this was just huge. The premise of the book was, here I was, an MIT engineer, and it was like, okay, if I was dropped in the Amazon basin by myself with no tools, How much of my modern society could I replicate? And I had to admit to myself, none. I mean, now I'm a lot better armed. I have a lot more knowledge now than I had back then. But even with my MIT degree and all my time spent in the backcountry, if I was plunked in the middle of the Amazon basin with no tools, no knife, no nothing, I'd be in a heap of trouble. And so part of that, the next extension of that thought is, okay, now what happens if our society falls apart? And all of those skills that our grandparents knew or somebody in our grandparents' community knew, I mean, that's been lost. Most of that has gone overseas.
Mm-hmm.
I had the good fortune when I was at MIT to take a class in old-fashioned foundry work, you know, casting metal. And this is kind of in the bowels of MIT, in this little dingy lab in a basement somewhere in the middle underneath this giant building. And there was this wonderful old foundry man, Ed, who'd grown up casting metal and doing it the old-fashioned way. And so we made wooden patterns, and we made sand casting off of our patterns, and we cast parts out of aluminum and brass, you know, like the way they did 100 years ago. Those skills are gone in this country for the most part. They've gone offshore, they've gone to the Philippines and China, places where labor is cheap and life is cheap, and you know, if somebody does it that way and their lungs burn out and they die at 40, then, you know, we here in America don't care.
Episode 184 of Outside the Box with my man Alex Ansari, with Matthew Stein, author of the book When Technology Fails at whentechnologyfails.com. Of course, that full hour-long episode and half-hour-plus interview is all available, and you'll always be able to find it at alexansari.com. So that does it for B-Side 106. Like I said, coming to you late Wednesday night. You'll probably hear this Thursday, so we'll just go ahead and call this January 15th, 2009. So many things. I know it's hard to do it all justice, and the times I'll think of things to cover and things to mention will be the times that I'm in the shower or smoking a cigarette or not really thinking about it, and it passes through my mind and say, oh, I need to make that point. I need to kind of clarify that on the side or on the show. And then when I'm sitting here at my desk at my little ramshackle studio, the smarter thoughts escape me that I once had. It all boggles the mind. And once again, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart, from all you guys who have dug the show, dug the site, caught on, sent me emails, contacted me. It's how we're going to do it all. We got to make a community somehow. And, of course, knowing that at any point, the folks that I communicate with, whether they're in Chicago or Germany or Portland even, we could all get disconnected because, hell, a powerful solar storm could knock out the internet and we won't be doing any of this, and we'll be left with our communities, which is what we need to work on. So with that, I'm going to tell you, we're going to go out with another classic from the Violent Femmes. I Hate the TV. And you should. And you should kill it. But like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
I hate the president.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same.
Out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.